take a look at the devices sitting around your home right now.
Right, like your phone or whatever.
Yeah, your smartphone, your gaming console, maybe, you know, a smartwatch charging on the nightstand.
We all have them.
Exactly. And you probably bought them because the specific logo stamped on the back, right?
Yeah.
Believing that logo bought you into this exclusive walled-off club.
Oh, for sure. The whole ecosystem trap.
But this week, the biggest companies on Earth are quietly admitting something pretty staggering. Those physical walls, like the plastic and metal boundaries you paid for, they don't matter anymore.
It's crazy. The barriers between ecosystems are actively collapsing.
They really are. So, welcome to this custom-tailored deep dive. Designed specifically for you, we're pulling heavily today from an incredible industry newsletter.
Yeah, the June 16th, 2026 edition of Taken Night.
Right, and they're calling this moment the Great Tech and Gaming Realignment. Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission today is to explore this fascinating industry-wide identity crisis.
It really is a crisis.
Totally. We're going to examine a single week where the traditional rules of tech are just being completely rewritten. I mean, we have Xbox actively dismantling its own exclusive ecosystem.
Which is wild.
The U.S. government abruptly shutting down a major AI model, and Wall Street banks suddenly becoming the biggest cheerleaders for decentralized crypto.
It's a lot of whiplash for one week.
It is. So for you, the curious learner who wants to understand the why and the how without getting, you know, lost in the weeds, my promise is this. By the end of this deep dive, you will understand exactly how these corporate pivots are going to fundamentally change the hardware you buy, the games you play, and, well, the digital safety you rely on.
And honestly, to really understand why these corporate walls are coming down, we have to look past the PR statements. We have to dig into the brutal mathematics forcing their hands.
Right. And nowhere is that math more punishing right now than over at Microsoft. So let's start with the bombshell out of the gaming sector.
Yeah, this one hurts.
It really does. According to the reporting, Microsoft is currently in active negotiations to either close or spin off three deeply beloved Xbox game studios. We're talking about Ninja Theory, Double Fine Productions, and Compulsion Games.
Which puts over 300 jobs at immediate risk.
Yeah, 300 jobs. And the timing here is just brutal, right? Mm-hmm. This is unfolding mere days after Microsoft showcased these exact studios' new games. Like, they just showed Hellblade 3 and South of Midnight at their massive summer event.
Literally just paraded them on stage.
Exactly. Plus, it follows mere weeks after they already shuttered Arcane, Austin, and Tango Gameworks. So, I mean, why parade these games on stage if you're about to close the studios making them?
Well, the short answer is the immense financial gravity of what Xbox has done to its own balance sheet over the last half decade.
You mean the acquisitions?
Right. Microsoft spent upwards of $75 billion acquiring massive publishers like ZeniMax and Activision Blizzard.
$75 billion.
Yeah.
With a B.
Yeah. And when a parent company authorizes a $75 billion check, the shareholders expect a phenomenal, almost immediate return on investment.
That makes sense.
But that creates a highly toxic environment for mid-sized prestige creative studios. I mean, think about the overhead. Running a studio like Double Fine costs roughly $20 to $50 million a year.
Oh, wow. Just to keep the lights on.
Exactly. And that includes the long years where they are strictly in development and not releasing anything. So Xbox is looking at the data and realizing that launching a quirky, critically acclaimed game on Game Pass
just doesn't cut it anymore.
No, it doesn't drive the millions of brand new monthly recurring subscribers required to offset that massive overhead.
So they're basically hunting for the recurring revenue monsters.
Yeah.
The big multiplayer games where people spend money every single day.
Precisely. They need astronomical scale, primarily because, well, they have unequivocally lost the hardware platform war.
Yeah, the console numbers are pretty rough.
They are. Currently, the Xbox Series X and S consoles have a combined install base of around 30 million units. Sony's PlayStation 5 is sitting at 65 million.
So that's a deficit of more than 2 to 1.
And the gap is only widening. Therefore, Xbox is fundamentally altering its identity. They're pivoting away from being a hardware platform holder and transforming into a multi-platform software publisher.
Which brings us to the ultimate taboo. Like the wall nobody ever thought would fall.
Yep, here it comes.
The sources confirm that Halo, Campaign Evolved, which is a ground-up remake of the original 2001 classic with brand new operation, Meteorite Prequel Missions, is officially launching on the PlayStation 5 on July 28th.
This is still hard to process.
Right. And they are charging a premium $69.99 for it. seeing Master Chief on a Sony console just feels like an alternate reality.
Well, to a legacy fan, it feels like a betrayal. But to a corporate accountant, it is absolute poetry.
Because of the math.
Exactly. The revenue math is inescapable here. Let's run the numbers. If Microsoft sells, say, 5 to 8 million copies of that Halo remake to the PlayStation's massive audience at $70 a piece,
that generates between $350 and $560 million in gross revenue.
Right. Now, Sony obviously takes their standard 30% cut of all platform sales. But even after paying that toll, Microsoft walks away with hundreds of millions of dollars in pure software revenue.
From an audience they historically refused to even acknowledge.
Exactly. The broader takeaway is that software sales have officially eclipsed hardware sales in importance. Keeping games exclusive to a struggling console is a luxury Xbox simply can no longer afford.
Okay, but wait, isn't this basically like a premium cable channel selling its absolute best award-winning shows to a rival network just to keep the lights on?
That's actually a great way to put it.
Because if Xbox's best games are playable everywhere, doesn't the physical Xbox console become completely obsolete? Why would you, or anyone listening to this, ever buy a plastic box from Microsoft if you can just play Master Chief on a PlayStation?
And that is the existential crisis of the brand right there. By making this move, they are actively alienating their most loyal core users to chase raw software revenue.
They're dismantling their own walled garden just to survive the winter.
Yep, tearing it down brick by brick.
So Xbox is surviving by tearing down its walls. But there is an entirely different way to play this game. You can actually double down on your walls, but make the inside of the fortress so comfortable and seamless that no one ever wants to leave.
The Nintendo approach.
Exactly. According to the newsletter, Nintendo just dropped firmware update version 22.5.0 for the Switch and the upcoming Switch 2. And on paper, it sounds incredibly boring.
Very boring.
Right. It adds Dutch and Russian language support. It makes the digital eShop about 40% faster to load. It adds a PIN verification system to stop kids from making accidental purchases. And it adds a 10-second skip forward and backward button to the video player.
It sounds totally mundane, but it represents the complete antithesis of Xbox's current chaos.
Yeah.
This is a masterclass in the tortoise strategy.
Slow and steady wins the race.
Precisely. Nintendo is focusing on incremental improvements that compound over time into fierce, unbreakable platform loyalty. Take the language support. By natively adding Russian and Dutch, they are lowering the barrier to entry in massive markets where they currently trail behind Sony. I mean, Russia alone represents over 15 million potential consumers.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that big of a market.
Huge market. Then look at the PN security. That directly addresses a significant real-world pain point for parents who are finding unexpected charges on their credit cards. They are methodically identifying friction within their ecosystem and just eliminating it.
Okay, here is where I get a bit confused, though. Is this actually a masterclass in excellence? Or is Nintendo just finally catching up to basic tech standards from a decade ago?
I see what you're saying.
Right, because a 10-second skip button isn't exactly a revolutionary breakthrough.
Yeah.
I mean, YouTube has had that feature since, what, the early 2010s?
That is a fair point. But in the realm of consumer hardware ecosystems, removing friction is the revolution, regardless of how old the underlying tech is.
Huh. So the age of the tech doesn't matter.
It truly doesn't matter if a feature is 10 years old. What matters is flawless execution within a closed system. By speeding up the eShop by 40% and making the video player intuitive, Nintendo ensures the user never experiences a moment of frustration that might make them put the console down.
So they just never leave the ecosystem.
Exactly. You don't always need to be the pioneer of a technology to win the market. You just need to implement it in a way that feels invisible to the user. Lowering the barrier to entry and smoothing out the edges builds a dominant, inescapable ecosystem.
Speaking of dominant ecosystems and lowering barriers, Apple just took that exact philosophy and applied it to fitness tracking in a way that feels almost predatory, but honestly, undeniably brilliant.
Oh, the GymKit update.
Yes. With the new iOS 27 update, Apple is radically expanding GymKit. Previously, to sync your Apple Health data with a treadmill or a stationary bike at your local gym, you absolutely had to own an Apple Watch.
Right. That was a gatekeeper.
But not anymore. Now, you just tap your iPhone to the treadmill's NFC sensor to pair it.
And this is where the hardware integration gets really clever.
So clever. The source mentions that if you're wearing the new AirPods Pro 3, the earbuds use built-in optical photoplethysmography sensors to read your heart rate, beam it to the treadmill, and then the treadmill sends your speed and incline data back to your phone.
seamless loop.
But wait, I don't have an Apple Watch in this scenario, and I'm just wearing earbuds. How on earth is a treadmill getting my heart rate from my ears?
It's actually a fascinating piece of biology meeting technology. Photoplethysmography is a really long word for a relatively simple concept.
Okay, break it down for me.
The AirPods are essentially shining microscopic, highly calibrated lights into the blood vessels inside your ear canal.
Wait, really? Just shining light in my ear?
Yeah. As your heart pumps, the volume of blood in those tiny vessels changes slightly, which changes how much light reflects back to the sensor. The earbuds calculate your heart rate based on those tiny fluctuations in light and transmit that data wirelessly to the gym equipment.
That is incredible. But why would Apple give this away? If I can track my heart rate and my treadmill miles just using the phone and the earbuds I already own, why would I ever buy an Apple Watch?
Because Apple is playing a much longer game here. They are executing a highly calculated three-tier fitness strategy.
Okay, what are the tiers?
Tier one is this new entry point. It costs roughly $249 for the AirPods Pro 3, assuming you already have the phone.
Right.
Tier two is the $249 Apple Watch SE for users who eventually decide they want a visual screen on their wrist during a workout. And tier three is the $799 Apple Watch Ultra 2 for hardcore athletes.
Oh, I see.
By allowing users to experience this seamless bi-directional data tracking without forcing a watch purchase up front, Apple effectively starves their competitors. If your earbuds already do the job flawlessly, you're never going to buy a mid-range fitness tracker from Garmin or Google's Fitbit.
You know, this feels a lot like handing out incredibly high-quality free samples at the grocery store.
That's exactly what it is.
They're letting you taste the convenience of their data ecosystem for free, knowing full well you will eventually get annoyed having to carry your heavy iPhone in your pocket while you run on the treadmill, and you'll just end up buying the Apple Watch anyway.
That is a perfect analogy. It is a brilliant ecosystem trap disguised as a free consumer upgrade. Apple thrives because it exerts absolute end-to-end control over its hardware and software. They dictate exactly how the data flows, ensuring the user experience feels magical.
If Apple thrives on absolute control, but what happens when a tech giant completely loses control over its most advanced software and the federal government decides to step in?
Yeah, this next story is heavy.
It takes us to the darkest story in our deep dive today. This is arguably the biggest AI regulation event of 2026.
Right.
On June 12th, the artificial intelligence company, Anthropic, you know, creators of the Claude models,
right,
they were forced by the U.S. Commerce Department to completely shut down their newest frontier models, Fable 5 and Mythos 5. And they had to pull the plug globally. This happened just 3 days after these models launched to the public.
A global, government-mandated shutdown of a major consumer AI post-launch is entirely unprecedented.
Completely unprecedented. And just to lay out the facts provided in the sources impartially here, this wasn't just a random glitch. Security researchers managed to jailbreak the AI.
They bypassed the safety guardrails entirely.
Right. They coaxed the Fable 5 model into generating highly sophisticated malware code alongside actionable plans for cyber attacks targeting critical infrastructure.
Terrifying stuff.
Yeah. And when Amazon, who is a major financial investor in Anthropic, discovered this, they bypassed standard channels and directly alerted the White House. The Commerce Department immediately issued an export control directive demanding that all foreign nationals be blocked from accessing the AI.
But they couldn't do it.
That's my question. Why did they have to shut it down for everyone in the entire world? They couldn't just, like, block foreign IP addresses.
Well, it comes down to the fundamental architecture of the internet. The government demanded that Anthropic ring-fence the AI by nationality, but technically speaking, that is currently impossible to enforce with certainty.
Because of VPNs.
Exactly. Think about how easy it is to use a virtual private network. A user sitting in another country can easily bounce their internet connection through a proxy server or some decentralized cloud infrastructure to make it look like they are logging in from Ohio.
Oh, right. It's super easy to spoof your location.
Because Anthropic could not guarantee with 100% certainty that they were blocking every single foreign national, their only option to comply with the federal export directive was to pull the plug on the entire global server network.
Wow. So the technology is effectively too borderless to regulate geographically.
Yeah.
What does this mean for the future of the industry then? I mean, if a financial backer like Amazon can trigger a multi-billion-dollar project to be shut down by the government 3 days after release, doesn't that create a staggering chilling effect?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, who is going to invest billions of dollars in frontier AI research if the government has a permanent finger hovering over the kill switch?
It creates a massive chilling effect, and honestly, that is likely the intent. The era of Silicon Valley's move fast and break things philosophy is officially over when it comes to artificial intelligence.
It's too dangerous to break things now.
Precisely. Governments around the world are no longer viewing these frontier models as consumer software. They are treating them as dual-use technology, subject to the exact same rigorous export controls and oversight applied to physical weapon systems.
Wow. Weapon systems.
Yep. Centralized authorities, you know, governments, defense departments, legacy corporations, they are rapidly tightening their grip on the digital world to ensure these tools don't destabilize physical infrastructure.
So the government is rapidly centralizing control over AI. Mm-hmm. But bizarrely, the traditional banking establishment is currently doing the exact opposite when it comes to the world of finance.
This was the biggest shock of the newsletter for me.
Same. Our final piece of the puzzle today takes us to Wall Street. And honestly, if you told me this 5 years ago, I wouldn't have believed it. Standard Chartered, a massive international bank managing over $700 billion in assets, just published an official research report predicting that the crypto token Uniswap trading under the ticker UNI will hit $100 by the year 2030.
Which is a massive jump.
It's huge. The token is currently hovering around $2.50. And the bank is explicitly claiming that Uniswap will outperform both Bitcoin and Ethereum over the next decade.
This represents a monumental paradigm shift in traditional finance. I mean, just a few short years ago, major legacy banks were publicly dismissing decentralized finance as a complete scam.
Right.
And now they're publishing detailed institutional research advocating for it.
Okay, before we get into their reasoning, the source mentions terms like DeFi and total value locked hitting $2.7 trillion. What do those terms actually mean in plain English?
Good question. So DeFi stands for decentralized finance. Instead of relying on a traditional bank or a broker to handle your trades or loans, DeFi uses automated software, basically. Smart contracts running on a blockchain to do it instantly.
No middlemen.
Exactly. And total value locked, or TVL, is essentially the metric for how much trust is in that system. It's the total amount of actual money that users have deposited into these automated smart contracts to provide the liquidity needed for trades to happen.
Okay, that makes sense.
And Standard Chartered is predicting that pool of deposited money will grow to $2.7 trillion by 2030.
Okay, and where does Uniswap fit into this trillion-dollar pool?
Uniswap is what is called an automated market maker. On Wall Street, if you want to sell a stock, there is literally a person or a centralized firm acting as a middleman to buy it from you and find a seller.
Right, a broker.
Yeah. Uniswap replaces that middleman with pure mathematics. It's a decentralized exchange run entirely by code. The bank is looking at giants like BlackRock beginning the tokenization of real-world assets, meaning they are taking traditional stocks, bonds, and real estate and putting them onto the blockchain so they can be traded fractionally and instantly. If Uniswap's automated code can capture even a fraction of the trading volume of traditional equities, the transaction fees it generates would be astronomical.
Okay, but let's be real here. We've all lived through wild crypto predictions before that ended in absolute tears.
Right, true.
The source material even points out the arguments against this, right? The looming threat of severe regulatory crackdowns, the reality that competing blockchain protocols could steal market share, and just the notorious volatility of crypto in general.
It's a highly volatile space.
So is this $100 bank prediction actually a guarantee of future value? Or is this just traditional finance trying to legitimize a new digital casino so they can eventually step in and take a cut of the fees?
That is the essential question to ask whenever an institution hypes an asset. The reality is, the specific $100 price target is largely a marketing tool to generate headlines.
Getting people to talk about it.
Exactly. What actually matters here is the institutional validation. A $700 billion bank is formally looking at decentralized automated protocols and declaring them a legitimate long-term asset class.
Real story.
Right. They are openly acknowledging that the future of trading might not happen on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, but on decentralized smart contracts. Wall Street is validating the very technology that was specifically engineered to bypass Wall Street.
Which brings us full circle perfectly. Mm. Let's summarize the journey we've taken today, because we have covered a staggering amount of ground.
We really have.
We've witnessed a week of profound realignment. We saw Xbox willingly breaking down its own exclusive hardware walls to sell games to PlayStation users. Mm. We saw Nintendo quietly fortifying their ecosystem by making it completely frictionless.
The tortoise strategy.
Right. We watched Apple use light sensors and earbuds to trap you in their health ecosystem without needing a watch. We saw the United States government treat a software launch like a national security threat and prove that AI cannot be contained by physical borders. And finally, we watched legacy Wall Street banks become the loudest advocates for decentralized crypto exchanges.
The overarching thread connecting all of these stories is how value is rapidly shifting away from physical objects and toward invariable systems. We saw Apple training users to view their devices as modular data collectors, and Xbox treating physical consoles as entirely secondary to software distribution.
It's all moving to the cloud.
Exactly. As the physical hardware becomes less important than the service it provides, whether that service is Game Pass, Gym Kit, or decentralized finance, ask yourself this. In 5 years, will the physical brand of the technology you buy even matter? Or will every device you own just be a generic glass window into a cloud service you subscribe to?
Man, that is a fascinating thing to mull over the next time you pick up your phone or turn on your console. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. As the walls continue to shift and disappear around us, keep questioning the rapidly changing digital world, keep looking for the why behind the headlines, and we will catch you next time.